Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We're going to be talking about the trials and tribulations of young people in the transgender community. Our first guest has done considerable research into the subject. While restroom issues get the headlines for those young people who want to express gender identity other than that assigned at birth, it goes much deeper than that. Wes Crenshaw is a psychologist, author, and certified sex therapist. And he joins us in studio once again. Wes, nice to see you once more.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Let's get some sense of what your research has been showing. What's the gist of what you've been finding out so far?
Well, this, of course, I'm always talking to are young people who are really in the throes of this. And the top thing that has become apparent to me is how much smarter they are about this than anyone else. And I am talking middle school kids. I always kind of hate to say this, but I never even used to like to work with middle school kids because I just, didn't think they were that interesting. And I have a ton of them now, and they are the most fascinating people ever because they are the most educated about this. So that's the number one finding I have at this point.
Are these transgender kids?
I see a number who are. But then also just regular kids coming in for a variety of things are knowledgeable about gender identity and sexual attraction in ways that are just surprising. Now, what's interesting about that is I've found the more educated they become, the less they're actually going out and engaging in sexual practices, which are broadly defined. But they're much more interested in talking about it and learning about it. So from my standpoint as a sex therapist, psychologist, and sex educator, that's the perfect scenario. They're actually becoming better armed with information about gender identity, sex roles, and sexuality than ever before.
And kids are so much more accepting, are they not, of people who are different?
This is very true. And, of course, you have different schools and different climates and environments. But in general, that is true. And I have clients from the Kansas City Metro. I have clients from Lawrence, which is, of course, a university town. And I have clients from little tiny towns all around. And this is a fairly consistent trend throughout those various environments.
That surprises me a little bit if it's the consistency when you talk about urban areas and more rural areas. Surprises you as well.
It does. As an example, more from the sexual attraction side, a few years ago, probably five, we did a show on your counterpart in KCUR, Up to Date with Steve Kratzky, and I invited on two teens, one transgender and one a gay male who was well-known in his high school and really well-liked. And unbeknownst to me, the week we had him on the show, he was elected prom king. That actually happened in another smaller school a year before that. So it's really – it is a different environment and I think a more positive one.
Why don't you just specify for us the difference between gender identity and sexual identity?
Yeah. It's a critical issue which could probably use up the rest of our time, but I will give the overview. So these are actually what we call in statistics uncorrelated or orthogonal. They're really separate issues. And sexual – what we've often called sexual orientation or identity is really better defined as sexual attraction. Everybody has an attraction profile. There are people you're attracted to that I'm attracted to that are different than other people. And that – now we understand extends to people of the same gender. So that's sexual attraction. Gender identity is much better described as an identity. It is how you see yourself, how you relate to yourself from either a male, female, or we now have a fair number of people who see themselves as gender fluid, meaning moving kind of back and forth or having a broad array or non-gendered, agendered people who do not see themselves, do not relate to themselves according to gender.
Yeah, give me some sense of what these kids are telling you, both those transgender youngsters and others who are their peers.
Yeah, that really gets to the question. What in general is happening? There are kind of two possibilities. In one sense, there is more celebration about this. Kids and people often wonder, are there more people coming out as transgender? And I don't – of course there are, but I don't know that that means there's more people who are transgender. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, this wasn't a question that people were willing to ask. Of course there was a segment of the population who did, but the majority didn't think that this was an okay question to ask. Well, now that that question is open and kids talk about it, they begin to say, how am I? Who am I? And that now is what kids are more readily talking about. I wouldn't presume someone is what we refer to as cisgender, meaning experiencing your gender as you would be assigned at birth, just because they're sitting in front of me and they look kind of cisgender. I would no longer assume that. I would not assume anyone is gay or straight anymore. These are all things that we now talk about early on so we understand how they relate to their sexuality.
One of the reasons we're talking about it is because it's getting a lot of publicity. The whole restroom issue has become sort of the issue in that community when it's so much more complicated and involved in that. And of course, the courts are acting, and that's getting a lot of attention.
I have two minds about this, and it evolves every day. In one sense, it seems like not really the important issue. And on the other, I think it is. And if you and I are enough of an age to remember when the Equal Rights Amendment was out in the 70s, and you may recall one of the big arguments people were making against the Equal Rights Amendment was that would allow anyone to use any restroom that they chose. And this just horrified everybody. And it was actually kind of a propaganda tool. Well, oddly, now we are having this discussion in a more serious way, and it raises questions about why do we think of restrooms as being gendered? If you want my prediction, I suspect in the next 10 years, it's not that everybody will be going to the same restroom, but restrooms will become more private. I think we won't have public restrooms and it will all go back to these questions about gender and sexual attraction and what they mean.
Let's talk for a moment about conversations you've had with transgender youngsters. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about what they are going through as they wrestle with their gender identity?
So I have in the book we're desperately still writing at 500 pages now. It's this much information. Yeah. In the chapter we talk about transgender identity. I have come up with what I call a conflict model for this. And kids I've talked with really identify this as pretty accurate. And the first thing that they're talking about is sort of the coming out to self, the idea that they are becoming aware that they have perhaps a different gender identity than the folks around them. And so that's what really begins it. And then, of course, there's a coming out to others that happens when they begin to express this through dress or manner or verbally to others. And that conflict is about the community. So those are the first two steps of it, and there's four.
What are the others? Okay.
You'd like to hear the rest. The third conflict is in having to talk with family about what level of transitioning will occur. And transitioning is I think a lot of people think they know what transitioning is. And one thing I have learned in doing this work is none of us know what transitioning is because we often think about genital reassignment. We think about for trans guys, breast reduction. We think of hormone treatments. These things all do play a role, but they aren't the only way to transition. And there are things that are done like binding the breasts to present a more masculine approach. That's part of transitioning. Well, where this gets hairy for kids who are minors is that they may wish parents to support this, and parents have to sign for this most states, I think all states, for any of this kind of medical treatment. And that brings the conflict to a different level. It's one thing to dress differently or to bind. It's another to ask parents to engage in a medical procedure or pay for that. And the final conflict, ironically, is the conflict with the therapist.
And that consists of what?
If you're going to do any transitioning, because this is such a serious decision, if you're going to transition even as an adult, you have to have at least one and often two letters from a mental health provider. And that isn't somebody you walk in and say, hi, I'm here for the letter. This is someone you have to really know and have had an experience with. Well, that's unusual in therapist land because we are usually either evaluators or therapists. And inevitably, when it comes to the letter for a transition, we have to be both. And so we have to know this person has become connected to this gender and then this is the best choice for them. We have to know they have mental health concerns. And that can provide a conflict between the roles of the therapist, the evaluator, and the client.
Well, let's talk about the role of parents for a moment and how that works. Again, with the people that you've talked to, what are they telling you? Mm-hmm. And what are the what are the corrections that parents have to make to deal with this?
So we kind of got through this era where coming out as gay or bisexual or lesbian was a big production, and people would go through, we'd role play it and rehearse it. Now people just say, hey, I'm dating Susan, and it's a very more natural process. That is yet to come for folks who are transgender. I have been there at that moment more than once. It almost takes your breath away because you're sitting here talking about, you know, school and academic issues, and the young person will say, well, you know, I'd really like to talk about it. I think I'm transgender. And that becomes the focus of the session. So there can be this sort of big discussion of it more now than there is with, say, gay and lesbian disclosure. Parents in general struggle more with this. There's a really good episode of the Moth Radio Hour. If you Google it and just put in transgender, there's a mom talking about how okay she was that her daughter was identifying lesbian and how completely blown away she was when the daughter began to identify as a trans male. And so parents are struggling with this because it's not who you love. They can kind of get that. It's who you are. And parents, we all are very sure, I'm one of them, that's very sure I know my kids and I know all of what they're about. Yeah. And this is the kid saying, you don't know me. And this is painful, but I've also seen it turn into quite an amazing experience even for parents.
You know, I have to take a break, but one of the things that is part of this, and we have a tweet here, remarking on the language that all of this has created. Mm-hmm. There's a great deal of sensitivity. And for instance, parents even have problems with pronouns. It takes mm-hmm. a while to become used to calling a he, a she, and that sort of thing. We have this tweet here, a reminder that transgendered and transgenders are incorrect. People should not – they should know that they shouldn't use that. A transgender people or a person is transgender is part of the new language of all of this.
I probably should elaborate on that a little because it is valuable to talk to people as they want to be spoken to. And so we did for a long time use the term transgendered. Well, you know, Phil is transgendered and we just don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And likewise, you don't say someone is a transgender. Like, you know, we don't say anymore, oh, Fred, he's a gay. See how odd that sounds. Mm-hmm. And people are still trying to adapt to this. But even more difficult, I will cop to struggling when I've known a young person as Jill and that young person begins to identify as John. Or even more complexly, identifies as gender neutral, then all of the pronouns shift to they, which becomes a very complicated sentence. And I think my experience has been for young people, they are fairly forgiving of their parents. Mm-hmm. And I ask them to be forgiving because this is a complicated change and when the language is hard to catch up to. And I have slipped more than once. And I usually am like, sorry, I got it. But the pronouns, when somebody walks in and they start with me as a trans male, it's not a problem because I've kind of patterned on them. But if I were a parent of a trans child, that would be a tough transition just in my mind and in my language. So there's both a balance of need for that good language and an importance for forgiveness as people are learning.
That is Wes Crenshaw, and we are talking about the transgender community and issues faced primarily by young people in today's world and dealing with issues related to that community. We'll come back and continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer a tweet, do so at STL on air. We have a couple of calls already with issues that we will continue talking about, and we'll do so in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to Wes Crenshaw. Wes, are some of the youngsters that we're talking about, transgender youngsters, are they subject to a lot of bullying?
Not so much anymore now. You know, the minute I say that, someone's going to call up and say, oh, my gosh, I was. And what I would put it this way, I do not think they are any more or less subject to bullying than other people are in a school. And I have that from the horse's mouth. We did a show with a eighth grader who is transgender in Kansas City, and they talked about how they had kind of a cadre of people who said, well, you don't have the right equipment to be one of us, and another cadre of people who were like, come on, join us. But that – and they are in a small school. They moved recently to a bigger school, joined the Gay Straight Alliance, or it's called SAGA now, to be a more broad and inclusive group, and feel just terrific. So of course there's variance, but the trend is towards acceptance. And I think it's because kids want to be accepted for their gender and sexual preferences and identities and attractions, and don't want other people to deny them that, so they are less likely to deny that to others.
Yeah, I want to get into the role that schools play, and we can do so with a member of the elected school board here in the city of St. Louis who's been waiting on the line. Bill Haas will join us. He wants to bring up the school issue. So, Bill, go ahead.
Thanks, guys. What a great program. I think I agree it's getting better. I think Bruce Jenner is Caitlyn Jenner has had a lot to do with that. I've watched both of the specials, and they were riveting and tear-bringing. For 20 years on the board, since I was first elected in April of 97, I've been lobbying for GLBT and now Q, reaching out, and we still have a lot of work to do. And my understanding of this, I read then that one-third of teen suicide attempts are orientation or identity related, and I don't think the statistics have changed much. And so I was wondering, I wanted to ask your guest, to his knowledge, what efforts districts can make to better reach out so students don't drop out or aren't harassed or try to hurt themselves.
Thanks for the call.
So real quick on statistics, it's always hard to catch up because statistics tend to be about 2 years old on suicide, and that's an eternity when it comes to gender and sexual issues in teens. So I will be interested in a couple of years of seeing if there's some change. Yes, in fact, being LGBTQ is a predictor for suicidal ideation or action. So we always want to be aware of it, which gets us into a whole other interesting question that we don't have time for about the issue of bullying and suicide, which was played out with the film's 13 Reasons Why. We've been doing a lot of media on that. What schools can do, I think they're on a good path. To my shock and awe, my hometown of Lawrence has recently implemented such a good sex education program at the direction of and under the leadership of one of the school board members there that I have trans kids coming to session saying to me, oh, my gosh, we had health today. It was just amazing. And I'm like, what? Like, when was the last time you heard that? And I said, what happened? Oh, we had sex education. It was amazing. We talked about all the – and giving me this bullet point list, this has literally never happened in my life to hear kids. Usually they laugh about it and talk about how lame it is. So you might want to call the district, the Lawrence, Kansas Public School District office and talk with them about what they're doing, because I am getting feedback I was never expecting about that. They're doing a good job of it.
What are you hearing from other parts of the country?
Well, I think it all, you know, across the street pretty much in the Shawnee Mission School District. Luckily, they can't hear me unless they're on the internet. They had just a ridiculous blow up last year. With one of their teachers, where the legislature tried to come in and legislate all these things that teachers couldn't teach kids about sex because somebody put up a poster unwisely on their door that referred to different ways people can express sexuality. And that just freaked the district out. So that's how much it varies. Those are almost contiguous school districts and how they're looking at this very differently. So it starts with good sex education, which isn't anymore about, you know, where the equipment operates. It's about how we look at each other and think about ourselves and one another and treat one another.
Of course, sex education is one of those subjects in many school districts where the parents are saying, lay off this subject. We'll take care of this at home.
Well, there's an argument to be made for that because you can't teach sex education without understanding a lot of values that go along with it. But we also know that parents that's the whole point of our book. Parents haven't done as good a job of that as they need to get us to where we need to be.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Brant will join us from St. Louis. Brant, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you, Don. I'd like to know how your guest would view an anorexic girl who perceives herself as overweight. Should she continue to diet? And I wanted to know, out of compassion, should we bury those with Cotard delusion?
Didn't quite catch the last part of that. With what?
Cotard delusion.
Cotard delusion?
Dead. People who are convinced they're dead.
Well, you're proposing that transgender people are psychotic. And, you know, that just doesn't comport with any literature. People who are anorexic aren't quite psychotic, but when you get to the point where you are seeing your body as fat when you are emaciated and you begin to actually lose some ability to reason, that's a mental illness.
But they still have the X or Y chromosomes they're born with.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
true.
Right. I'm not quite sure where you're headed.
Well, I'm challenging you. They
right.
still have the X or Y chromosomes they're born with.
And therefore they must at all costs remain the gender they were assigned at birth, is your point?
I think you like your job security. I think you like your job security is what this is about.
Yeah, I don't get rich enough off this to do that.
Brant, thanks. We're going to move along, but thank you for the call.
It gives you a good example of people's emotional response to this. And I think it's important he called because we need to realize it's not a – this isn't a done deal. Not everybody's sold.
It also reflects an opinion that a lot of people have about homosexuality, and that is that
sure.
is something you can change. That is something that that has been selected or chosen by you, and if you want to change it, you can go ahead and do so.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing as we've moved into this younger generation, they don't tend to look at themselves as gay or straight. Some do. Some really identify with that. But they tend instead to think about who they're attracted to. And this is why in our book we talk a lot more about attraction profile is who draws your interest. And if you've noticed, I think every listener can identify with the idea that some people they look at are the ones that ring their bell. That person is who they like to see, who they like to look at. And, you know, I kind of looking at my wife. I think she looks pretty good. And other people like looking at – who are men like looking at men. Mm-hmm. That's what draws their attention. And if we take it down to that relatable level, it no longer is quite so scary or strange. Gender is different, but what young people are saying today is you can't order me to be male because I was born with X and Y chromosome. And I think it's hard to refute.
There's another element here, that being that, you know, we tend to be suspect of people we don't know who are different.
Sure.
And once we get to know them, we find out that all is well, that they're perfectly wonderful people and they become friends and all the rest of it. This happens a lot.
Absolutely true. And some of the most delightful people I know right now are trans kids. And I have a broad array of people I see. You know, I do a lot of work with ADD and with adults. And so I see a lot of different people, and some of the most interesting, delightful, and well-informed, thoughtful people I see right now are trans kids. Now, there is a high correlation between transgender identity and being on the autism spectrum. So because I do both of those things, I have a fair overlap of those things. And that's literature-based. That's not just my theory. So, you know, you have sort of a really interesting group to begin with, but there is some correlation there.
In your research, what have you found out about awareness when young people become aware that they're in this situation, they are transgender children? Is this something that happens very early on, or something you talk about middle school, or is this something that an awareness occurs later, 8, 10, 12 years old?
You're always reliant in these situations on people's retrospective report, or almost always. You will absolutely, you know, there have been many reports in media on younger children really early on identifying with not a gender not assigned at birth. But it really is all over the map. There are a whole lot of kids who will come in and say, I don't know this, because the question is on the table, whereas it has previously been a chromosome question. Everybody knows you're a girl. And now that it's an open question, you get kids who just in the last 2 or 3 years are beginning to reassess this. So we have people that will say, I knew when I was 3 years old that I was male when they were assigned female at birth. And you'll get kids who are just coming into this. And at this point, we're getting adults who, seeing this sort of revolution of in transgender issues, are beginning to recognize this is how I always felt. I just didn't know that.
You say that you've got about 500 pages already done on the book that you've been working on.
It's got to end soon. Yeah. I know. We're on the last chapter.
What do you want to do with this book? I mean, what is the book? What is the end game here?
Well, so the book's Consent-Based Sex Education, Parenting Teens in an Internet Age. And I'm afraid when we're done here this next week, we're going to have to turn around and rewrite the whole book because so much has changed in the 2 years we've been developing it. But our goal is to give parents a just boilerplate system to talk to their kids about all these issues, which we lay out in 11 chapters, and then we have actual scripted dialogues at the end of each chapter that you can kind of practice and fit into your discussion with kids, because some people just, I understand, don't have the language to do this. And I don't just mean transgender versus transgendered. They don't know how to, you know, they keep saying, are you having sex? Well, that just isn't even a meaningful sentence. You know, that sex ranges from kissing somebody to having penis-vagina intercourse. And those things are all a part of sex. And so just helping people have a better conversation with kids, that is the goal.
We only have a minute left, and somewhere along the line, the Caitlyn Jenner was mentioned. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that when Caitlyn Jenner came out and was going through all of the publicity, that more people were making fun of her than not. And I wonder how harmful that is to this whole issue.
You know, I don't follow that story as close as I could, but one of the things I remember Caitlyn Jenner saying in an interview that I thought was very well done to respond to that was she said, you have to have a sense of humor about this. And I think she's done a good job of dealing both with the pain and the, I don't know, media part of it. What is different, though, Caitlyn Jenner comes from a generation where transition is – and a lot of the people who do transition surgery follow that generation – is a very all-or-nothing proposition. Mm-hmm. What's confusing for people today is that's not where a lot of kids are, which is a whole other show.
Got to leave it right there. I want to thank you so much, Wes Crenshaw, for being with us once again. Important subject, and people have to come up to speed on it, I think. It's happening all around us.
It is happening.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.